Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with non-dual teacher Rupert Spira, and we're talking about non-dualism and the nature of reality. Rupert, I wanted to ask you, you've just described this feeling of love, this feeling of non-duality. This is something that we've all experienced.
Absolutely.
You've really kind of carried us there and said, hey, this isn't exotic. This isn't far away from
exactly.
us. And so what is your recommendation or advice about how to bring this more into our daily lives?
For most people, this approach starts with an investigation into our experience. We have all been conditioned by our culture to believe that first there was the Big Bang, and then time and space, and then the universe, and then the world, and then the body, and then the brain. And at some late stage, this phenomenon called consciousness appeared. Now, that view of reality is at odds with our experience. In our experience, consciousness, or awareness, I use the terms synonymously, is the primary element of experience. Nobody has ever experienced a universe or a world or a body or a brain or a thought without consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So this approach involves a very honest exploration of experience. We don't start with any assumptions or beliefs. We agree that experience must be the test of reality. In other words, we are really a little bit like scientists. We agree that if something is real, experience must be the test. So we explore our experience. What is the primary element of experience? Consciousness. Can you have an experience of anything without consciousness?
Well,
without awareness.
Awareness. That's an easier word for me
awareness.
To work with. Awareness.
Okay, let's use the word awareness.
So can I experience this cup of water in front of me without awareness? No, I can't. I mean, I may think of this cup as something separate from myself still. I'm not there yet.
That's right. We may think.
Uh-huh.
Or believe that the cup has an existence independent of awareness, but we don't want to refer to our beliefs. Yeah, we want to be like honest scientists and refer only to experience.
Okay.
Has anyone or could anyone experience a world, a body, a thought, a cup, anything at all in the absence of awareness?
My first intuitive answer is no.
Yes.
We can only experience it through awareness.
Perfect. Yes. In other words, awareness is the primary element of experience. We cannot legitimately assert the existence of anything prior to awareness, because we could never experience anything prior to awareness.
Because we wouldn't be aware of it.
Perfect.
Yes.
I couldn't have said it better.
Right.
However, our world culture is founded upon the presumption that the world made out of this dead inert stuff called matter was here first, and that at some late stage, awareness developed in the brain.
Well, that's the materialist viewpoint of materialist science.
Well, that's just
there are some philosophers that would say that consciousness was there.
Well,
and then out of that came the material.
You're talking to one of them. Yes.
Oh.
You're talking to one of those people, philosophers, or that would say awareness or consciousness is the primary element of reality. That it's not consciousness that comes out of matter. That matter is a way of... Matter is not what we see, it is a way of seeing. Jane, remember Jane in the dream? Mary falls asleep in New York. She dreams she's Jane on the streets of Paris. Jane believes that the world she sees, the streets of Paris, is made out of stuff called matter. That is stuff that exists outside of her own mind. But when Mary wakes up, she realizes that the streets of Paris was not made out of stuff called matter. It was made out of her own consciousness.
Right.
So Jane on the streets of Paris thinks, the world was here before me. I was born into the world.
Right.
The world made out of matter was here
first. It was here before me, yes.
It was here. In other words, matter is primary. But when Mary wakes up, she realizes, no, this world made out of matter was just how my own mind appears to itself when it is perceived through Jane's mind. In other words, matter is not what we see, it is a way of seeing. And
yes.
It's not a coincidence that the more physicists look for the stuff called matter, the less like matter it becomes.
I'm going to have to contemplate that what you just said. Matter is a way of seeing.
Not something that is seen.
Matter is a way of seeing, not something that is seen.
Yes.
Let's talk a bit. Go ahead.
Sorry, just to interrupt.
Please.
This is what William Blake meant when he said, as a man is, so he sees. What he meant was, as we understand the nature of our own mind, so the world or reality appears in correspondence with that understanding. In other words, if we want to understand the nature of the world, we first have to understand the nature of the mind through which the world is perceived.
Right. It's not the world out there that exists. Well, that brings up the question, do we all live in different worlds then of our own perception?
No. No, that's not necessarily the implication of what I'm suggesting, because I'm suggesting that each of our minds appears within and is informed by the same infinite awareness or consciousness. So let's go back to the dream analogy. Mary falls asleep in New York. She dreams she's Jane on the streets of Paris. All Jane's friends on the streets of Paris see the same world, roughly. Why? Because they all appear in Mary's mind. It's the sameness of Mary's mind that makes Jane and her friends feel they see the same world.
So if you're saying Mary's mind is all-pervasive consciousness...
Exactly.
Then it's the same perception.
Yes. In other words, there is this all-pervasive consciousness, and each of our minds appear in and are informed by the same field of consciousness. And therefore, part of our experience is shared. We view the same world. We do experience the same world, but not because there is one world out there made out of matter, but because each of our minds are precipitated within the same infinite consciousness.
So does consciousness have a point of view?
Well, that's like saying, does Mary have a point of view? Yes, Jane is her point of view. Jane is the view, is the point through which Mary sees the world. So each of our minds are consciousness's point of view. Or in religious terms, we could say each of our minds are an open window through which God's infinite being knows itself as the world.
So that would... mean that there is a room for individuality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That there is room for individuality, but at the same time, there is a recognition that the essence of each one of us is the same. But that doesn't mean that all of us become merged into one stereotypical person. No, there's each of our bodies, each of our minds is unique and individual. But what is recognized that is the essence of each of our minds is shared.
So this is what keeps it life from being boring, in my terms.
What makes for boredom and stereotypes is the belief that each of us is a separate, finite self. In other words, the ego. The ego is a stereotype that is always conforming. So, in fact, that this point of view increases our the diversity, individuality. It increases the sense of freedom, and therefore, our characters are relieved of the tyranny of the ego. They actually flourish as a result of this understanding. They are not all made some uniform, blank, whitewashed screen. On the contrary, our characters flourish when they are relieved of the dulling or the separating effect of the separate ego.
Oh, I'd like to understand that more fully, Rupert, because that interests me, how we might flourish.
Well, you see, the sense of being a separate self, a fragment, cut off from everyone and everything, makes people fearful and in need. And in fact, the fear and need are the two defining characteristics of the apparently separate person or ego. Anyone that feels that they are a separate individual is motivated primarily by fear and need, or seeking, or resistance and seeking. So if we feel I am a separate individual, cut off from everyone and everything, our sole motivation in life is to acquire an object, a substance, an activity.
So there's a grasping.
Yes. And we grasp, what are we grasping? We're grasping some kind of object, a substance, an activity, a relationship. And the purpose of that grasping is to bring an end to the sense of lack, or in fact, the fear of death. These are the two motivations that motivate the separate self, the sense of lack and the fear of death or disappearance. And most people seek objects, relationships, substances to put an end to that sense of lack or fear. Now, if a sense of being a separate self dissolves, if we know that what we essentially are is without limits, is ever-present, then our relationship with life changes. It doesn't mean to say we stop seeking relationships or having relationships or activity, but we stop seeking relationships in order to produce happiness for a separate, needy self.
I'm here with Rupert Spira. He's the author of two volumes, Presence, The Transparency of Things and The Intimacy of All Experience. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with non-dual teacher Rupert Spira, and we're talking about non-duality, about the ultimate reality, about presence. And you just mentioned in the last segment, you mentioned something about death and our fear of death. And when we know that we are one with universe, with one with all that is, we are not separate from reality, and then we're released from the fear. And one of our primary fear is the fear of death. And so in all of this, what about death? So why shouldn't we fear our demise and death? Is there death? Tell us about death and the concept of death, and is that real?
If we make a deep exploration of what we essentially are, at the core of ourselves, we find this presence of awareness. The presence of awareness that is aware of our thoughts, feelings, sensations, and perceptions, but is not itself a thought, feeling, sensation, or perception. We could call it an empty or transparent knowing or aware presence that is prior to our essential self-aware being that is prior to any thought, feeling, sensation, or perception. All thoughts, feelings, sensations, and perceptions are continuously appearing and disappearing. But this background presence of awareness, our essential being, remains consistently present throughout all experience. In other words, the awareness that is currently aware of this experience is in exactly the same condition as the awareness that was aware of our experience 2 minutes ago, or 2 hours ago, or 2 days ago, or 20 years ago, or when we were all five-year-old girls and boys playing in the garden. In other words, the presence of awareness, our essential being, is always in the same pristine condition. It could be likened to a screen upon which the movie of life is playing. The screen is never harmed by the movie. The movies just pass over the screen, but they don't stain the screen. They don't hurt the screen. They don't damage the screen. They don't age the screen. So once we know that we are this open, empty presence of awareness through which all experience flows or in which all experience appears, we have a sense that no experience leaves a trace on us. No experience harms us. Our essential being is always in the same innocent, fresh, pristine, wide-open condition. It's like the space of this room. Nothing that takes place in the space of this room could hurt the space. So there is this recognition. Nothing that takes place within me, however wonderful or awful my experience might be, nothing can stain or essentially affect what I am. What I am is this whole, indivisible, indestructible, aware being. All thoughts, sensations, and perceptions appear and disappear, but I, this self-aware being, don't appear or disappear. I don't come and go. I am ever-present. I am eternal.
So what I'm getting from this is that in the direct path that you're talking about, there's not necessarily a progression of knowing that we go from this stage to
exactly.
this stage or this stage,
exactly.
but it can be right in the moment.
Whatever conditions we find ourselves in, we may be in the midst of a trauma or a crisis, so we may be sick. Whatever circumstances we find ourselves in, we go directly to the experience of being aware, which is this background of awareness that remains present throughout all changing experience, like the screen remains present throughout all changing movies. And we go directly there, irrespective of the content of our lives, the content of our thoughts. I mean, so it's a very direct path. It requires no preparation, no training, no arduous meditation practice. We just go directly, oh yes, what I essentially am is the presence of awareness through which all my experience flows, but which is never harmed or hurt or stained or changed or aged by experience. In other words, we recognize the essential, imperturbable nature of ourself. And this is what is referred to as the peace that passeth understanding. It is the peace that is not the result of particular experiences or conditions. It is the peace that is prior to all objective experience, the peace that is innate in our own being. And it is there for the asking. It just requires turning round, as it were, and looking at the essential nature of what we call I, or myself.
So in this, does that mean that if we do certain practices, like, say, the practice of meditation, I mean, could that be helpful, though, to help us to maintain or to create some sort of stability in this open, empty presence that you're talking about?
Yes. In this approach, meditation is not considered to be a practice in the sense of manipulating one's experience or focusing one's mind in any way. And meditation in this approach is what we are. It's not what we do. Meditation is to be knowingly this open, empty presence of awareness, rather than to become something in the future. We are already, what we essentially are, is already this open, empty space of awareness in which all thoughts, sensations, and perceptions arise. We don't have to practice in order to become that. We just simply have to first notice that and then take our stand as that.
So I want to ask you one other question, and that's the, I know that you have said, you have talked about longing, as longing is not something that, I mean, we all are looking, longing for God, longing, that idea, that concept of longing, and you're saying that is not something that's terribly beneficial for us.
Yes.
Can you explain?
Yes. When we are in a state of longing, our longing comes because we feel something is missing. And so we long for an object, a relationship, a child, a house, or God. Or we long for something which we believe will finally put an end to our sense of lack. And as we all know, no object of experience ever fully brings our longing to an end. It may temporarily bring longing to an end, but as soon as the object either vanishes or changes, the sense of longing comes back, and hence we go for the next object, and hence the cycle of expectation, desire, fulfillment leads to addiction. So once this cycle or process has been observed, we realize that what we are longing for lives at the source of our longing. It never at the end of our longing. In other words, our essential being, the innate peace of our essential being, is in fact what we have been seeking all this time in objects in the world. The objects in the world never provide the peace or the fulfillment for which we long. And at some stage, we are open to this new possibility that what we long for, the peace for which we long, the fulfillment for which everybody longs, lives in their own being. It's accessible, available to everybody in their own being. But most of us are so fascinated by the objective contents of experience, our thoughts, our images, feelings, relationships, activities, that we overlook this simple presence of our own being, in which is, as I said earlier, like an open space that is never harmed or changed or moved or hurt by experience. In other words, its nature is peace. The peace for which we have been looking all along in the world, in fact, was in our own being all the time.
I know that we often have, like, the habit of longing. I mean, we're taught that. Advertising teaches us to long for things.
Advertising not only encourages us to long for things, as you say, but they also persuade us over and over and over again that when we get the object that is being advertised, our longing will come to an end. And what is the end of longing called? It's called happiness. In other words, advertising encourages us to think that if you only have this object, or if you only look like this person, or if you only have this car, your longing, your happiness, your longing will come to an end. But we all know it doesn't work. At some stage, when we have been failed sufficiently often by objects and relationships and activity, we are open to this new possibility that the peace or the fulfillment for which we long resides in our very own being all along. And that is the place to find it or access it. And in this direct approach, we go straight there. We don't go via a series of progressive practices, or we go direct to the peace of our true nature.
Rupert, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Justine. I've enjoyed it very much.
I've been here with Rupert Spira. He's a non-dual teacher, and he's the author of Presence, Volume 1, The Art of Peace and Happiness, and Volume 2, The Intimacy of All Experience. To find out more about the work of Rupert Spira, go to his website, rupertspira.com, S-P-I-R-A, rupertspira.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3598.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Karen Casey, author of Each Day a New Beginning. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about insights on cultivating more love and peace in your life.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.